As AI continues to revolutionize our world, there's a critical conversation we can't ignore: AI safety and security. And that's where HackerOne's AI red teaming comes into play, rigorously testing AI models to prevent them from being misled or exploited. HackerOne employs over 2 million ethical hackers, and 750 of them specialize in prompt hacking and other AI security and testing. So HackerOne isn't just theorizing, they're actively safeguarding AI's future. Just recently, a team unearthed over 100 vulnerabilities in just 2 weeks. So whether you're at the helm of a startup or steering product innovation at a large company, it's time to prioritize AI security. Visit HackerOne.com/AI for more. Again, HackerOne.com/AI.
This episode is sponsored by porkbun.com. Porkbun is a refreshingly different domain name registrar that's different from the other ones like GoDaddy or Namecheap. They've got low prices on hundreds of different domain extensions. They've got everything from .com domains to really cool ones like .pro, .dev, .xyz. Every domain name at Porkbun comes with tons of freebies too, like SSL certificate, whois privacy, DNS, URL forwarding, and hosting trials. Because why pay for things that should be free, right? All these incredible features and tools are backed by incredible support, 365 days a year, and more 5-star reviews on Trustpilot from real customers than anyone else. Look, you can get $1 off your next domain name from Porkbun and see why they're the best domain name registrar around by using our code. Just go to porkbun.com/rocketshipfm24. That's porkbun, porkbun.com/rocketshipfm24. You'll save $1 on your next domain. This episode is brought to you by Gigantic. At Gigantic, you can level up your product skills through live, small group, cohort-based trainings. We're incredibly excited to welcome you to our next cohort of our product strategy training, kicking off in January of 2024. This course will take you through the frameworks that product leaders use at companies like eBay, DoorDash, Groupon, Rent the Runway, in order to scale their teams. It's taught by Ben Foster, a friend of this podcast, who is the former chief product officer at Whoop. So come join us. Go to gigantic.is. That's gigantic.is. And save your seat for our January cohort. Your potential is gigantic, and we're here to help you reach it. Go to gigantic.is to reserve your seat today. Today on the show, we feature Laird Hamilton, and this has got to be one of my favorite interviews we've ever done. We did this interview last year for This New Economy, and we're releasing it for the first time in its entirety today. We talked to Laird about his career as a big wave surfer, what drove him to success, and what drove him to take the risk that he did in order to achieve greatness. I really hope you enjoy this. Please check out the documentary Take Every Wave, The Life of Laird Hamilton, if you get a chance. Enjoy. Welcome to Rocketship.fm. In season 4 of Rocketship, we are diving into everything product and growth.
Rocketship FM is produced in partnership with Product Collective.
We're your hosts, Michael Sacca
and Mike Belsito.
All right, cool. So, first, I'd love to hear about kind of how you discovered your passion and your love for surfing. When did it first enter your life?
I think I had the fortune to have, first of all, I had the fortune to have, you know, be exposed to surfing at an extremely young age and kind of have an idea that I wanted to do something with surfing and my surfing. From, you know, like three years old, wow. three or four years old and pretty obnoxiously, I would add,
okay. You know, yeah.
Young. There's always stories about me telling people I was going to be the greatest and they'd just tell me, please shut up. And, you know, I think I was a little, and my stepdad was a great surfer as well. And okay. So, that also kind of influenced my, I think I already wanted to be a great surfer, but when I had a stepdad that was a great surfer, I'd tell people, you know who my dad is, you know, kind of thing. So it was obnoxious.
Was he like on a professional or kind of in the local area?
No, he was a professional.
Okay.
He was and at that time that wasn't so defined as it is now. There wasn't per se a tour. It was more, I call it performance artist. So okay. he was in a few kind of great films and was considered to be in his time one of the, you know, one of the most aesthetically beautiful surfers.
Okay.
So he was, I would describe Bill Hamilton as being at that time world famous.
Wow. Okay. All right. Wow. That's incredible.
Yeah.
So what did the industry look like at that time? We have like magazines and everything, but
there wasn't much of an industry. I mean, there was obviously, you know, Surfer Magazine was started in the 60s. There was really not any tour, you know. Okay. There was, I think you know, like even to present that the apparel companies were the ones that really made the most money and had the most money. Part of it is because they're selling lifestyle. Okay. And so they were selling lifestyle. And the way you made money was you either worked with a board brand and that was a little more lucrative in those days. There just wasn't as many and the value of the boards were worth more. Okay. You know, for what the money was worth, but apparel was the industry. And, you know, you would, you know, I think he surfed for Hang Ten and, you know, was on the Wind and Sea Surf Club and then did films. And I mean, you weren't, it was, unless you owned a company, you weren't really making money, as an athlete. Professional surfers were, you know, usually it was subsidized. Either you were a board builder, you worked at a factory. You know, there wasn't enough of an opportunity to really make a living, exclusively from just being a surfer.
Okay. So what did your days look like in those, like when you were young, were you going out in the water with him every day?
Surfing's an interesting thing and he was a younger guy, at the time and I wouldn't call it support. I wouldn't say like now, you know, you see dads and they got their kids with the GoPro on, the kid's 5 years old. You're like, hey, you might want to wait a while and see if he actually likes it before you try to make him a pro. But that's just part of the, you know, that's where we live. You know, that's our space that we live in. And for me, it's a lot of it was on your own. You know, I obviously got pushed into waves a lot when I was really young before I could kind of figure out how to do it on my own. But I listen. Right off the bat, my mom was from a surf community in Southern California. She took me to Hawaii before I was, before I could had memory. I would describe it, and then I was around all these surfers, and I lived at Bonsai Pipeline, which, if you know anything about surfing, at the time that was the mecca of surfing. That'd be like, you know, you live next to Yankee Stadium, or, you know, you're a baseball player and you live down the street from one of those things, or you live, you know, next to where the Green Bay Packers. I mean, it was this place was the spot. This was like anybody that was a good surfer from anywhere in the world came there, and we lived at that beach. People had to walk to our front yard to go there. So I saw, you know, all the guys so I think that made it kind of tangible. That was a tangible thing. But I was at this rugged beach and I spent my days on the sand. I spent my days getting rescued quite often. I used to get washed out to sea. I would say I got washed out to sea daily, but that seems a little extreme. But it was definitely multiple times a week.
Wow. You know? And like that was a like, did your parents freak out when it was just, or is it kind of part of the culture?
Yeah, I mean, my mom freaked out because my mom was concerned, obviously, because of my rambunctiousness. And I can remember, well, that, you know, the lifeguard would come to the house and say, hey, Laird's out in the rip again. You know, we're going to, you know, and she'd go, oh, no, he's in his room, you know, taking a nap. yeah, no, he's out there right now. And they get sick of swimming out there and having to get me. They were like tired of it. They were like, you know, we're not going to swim out. You know, that's the fifth time this week, Mrs. Hamilton. You know what, Laird, you gotta control your dog, you know,
right.
You gotta control your animal. And that was an impossible task just cause I'm going to get out there. I'm going to do it. And you know, whether I'm 3 or 4 years old, I think I can, you know, be with the men kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, when did you start receiving, like recognition for being, you know, at the top of your game or kind of when you could see that beyond like the boasting, but when you could really see that you were up there with the guys who were,
you know, I mean, I had some exposure at a pretty young age, you know, which can be good and bad. I think I remember one of my first pictures in Surfer magazine, a big spread in the magazine. I was probably, I would say, you know, 16,
wow.
16, 15, 16, something like that. I might've had some a little earlier. And I don't, you know, I think because also the generation and the time frame and what there was going on at the time, it seemed like I actually kind of, even though I decided early on that what I wanted to do, I didn't really kind of begin to fully saturate myself. I call myself in a way a late bloomer, you know, as much as I started early, but I didn't, I wasn't, you know, now, I guess now everything's so sped up, you know, they have little kids surf contests and they send them out there when they're 7 years old. And it's like, you know, they're already like, hey, I just turned pro. And, you know, they're 9 and you're right. Like, yeah, well, shouldn't you finish growing first or, you know, but that's so that seems to be the time we're in. But,
yeah,
you know, for me, I felt like that I start, you know, they became when I started to be kind of become a man, like, you know, because. And my pursuits in the big, you know, it's in the big field. You know, I want to go in the big waves, and you know, as a little kid, you're not going to do much until you're strong enough to be able to be in those conditions, and that usually means puberty. Okay. That's puberty. That's, you know, you're getting old enough to, you know, to be able to go out there and actually physically, you know, endure.
We'll be right back after a quick word from our sponsors.
When Rainn Wilson realized he had a special gift for talking people to sleep, he had two choices: construct a massive speaker that would blast his voice to every person in the country, or invent a talking pillow. AT&T Business eventually talked him into the pillow thing. And backed by a reliable network, the only network with built-in security controls, Sleep with Rainn was a hit. Take your ideas to the moon and beyond at business.att.com. That's business.att.com. This episode is brought to you by Yahoo Finance. Wouldn't it be great if you could see all of your investment and retirement accounts in one place? With Yahoo Finance, you can consolidate your views with multiple accounts into one hub and access the expert analysis you need to tend to your entire portfolio with confidence. Honestly, this has been a lifesaver for me. I've used Yahoo Finance to consolidate all of my various 401k and investment accounts so I can see everything all in one place. And it makes it incredibly easy to manage. So if you're struggling with that, check out Yahoo Finance. For over 25 years, Yahoo Finance has been the brand behind every great investor. You can securely link your brokerage accounts for a unified view of your wealth, including your 401k and other investments. A comprehensive perspective is what sets apart a great investor, and that's how Yahoo Finance ensures that you have the insights to look at your wealth in its entirety. So go to yahoofinance.com. That's yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination.
Now, back to the show.
What did your regimen look like when you started, like, looking at this as a professional endeavor?
Well, you know, I mean, for me, I think I looked at it as a life.
Oh, okay.
Like,
yeah.
I looked at it as a life. It was beyond just like, hey, I'm going to be good at this, but this is my life. Like, I'm going to eat this and sleep this and drink this. And this is going to be, this is my life. This is who I am, what I am. And, you know, I mean, I was all in. And I think that you know, that just kind of, you know, I call it the terrier side of you, where you just have the relentless pursuit, you know, you just relentlessly, you know, the hours and hours and hours and hours that you put in, you wake up, you know, I mean, I think at one point I ditched school 45 days out of 90 days. I mean, that was before. Now they, if you're gone one day, they're like, hey, we didn't see Mr. Hamilton today. Right. They just tweet you or whatever. Now, I mean, for me, I was like, not until you got the report card, my parents went, 90 days absent? Like, what do you mean? Like, how was he not there half the days? And I was like, yeah, well, I drew, you know, the bus went right by the good surf spots. I just get off. You know? And, but so in a way, I think my saturation, and because where I was, you know, we moved to a remote, place in Hawaii, and that's all there was. I mean, okay. You know, television had two channels, and I had, you know, when I got a bicycle, that was like a monumental thing. I didn't have five bikes by the time I was four, like now, you know, like kids do now, because you can just go down to Costco and buy, you know, you can buy them. So I think my saturation,
okay,
because that was all there was to do.
Yeah.
So I was like, so we were, you know, I spent a lot of time in the ocean. I mean, you know, dawn till dusk, I would just, we were in the water, you know, all day long, every day. And it wasn't always just surfing. It was swimming. It was fishing. It was, you know, it was, just, you know, that's why we talk about being a waterman, that it's more about this whole kind of encompassing, lifestyle that you do that connects you to the ocean. Okay. And so it was really, you know, it becomes a bigger thing than, hey, I'm going to be a pro surfer. And now I'm not anymore, kind of thing. Like, I'll never not be who I am, no matter how long, whatever happens. I don't, you know, it's no one can just say, hey, your season's over, you can't play anymore, you know, kind of thing.
Right. Absolutely. Who was your first endorsement, your first professional endorsement?
That's an interesting question. Who was it? I want to say I had some apparel company. It might have been probably Salt Creek. It was a guy from the California that came, and he was starting an apparel company, and it was, I think it was called Sunbreaker.
Okay.
Sunbreaker, or something, like a new startup apparel company. You know, a guy from Orange County came over to Hawaii and was on vacation and saw me surf and went, okay, well, yeah, okay, we'll you know, we'll sponsor you. And I mean, I think at the end, you know, in the beginning, it was like, you know, hey, a box of clothing and you're, you know, you're all excited, you know, t-shirts, yeah, and t-shirts and shorts. You don't realize you can't pay mortgages with that. But
unfortunately, right?
It's all good.
What was, you describe it as your life. I'm curious if there's anything that you feel like you may have sacrificed in the pursuit of this greatness. Like, are there things that maybe you didn't do or you did later on, that you delayed in order to kind of achieve the level that you did?
Well, I think the sacrifices are many.
Yeah.
You know, when I look back and I go, I mean, that was part of the cost of doing business. I mean, part of it was to do what you had to do. I mean, I think I sacrificed relationships. I sacrificed, at a certain point, I know I sacrificed education, much to my mother's dismay. I pretty much would sacrifice. I mean, obviously, I've been willing to risk my life.
Yeah.
So, you know,
that's true. And
more than once. So I would say I was prepared to pay the ultimate sacrifice, which was to risk my well-being more than once. You know, and it seemed completely right and natural.
Really? You never kind of question those giant, like the giant wave?
Yeah, you know, I can't say I didn't question them, but for me, it seemed pretty clear. Okay. Like it seemed like those weren't huge decisions, because I knew that I was on the right path. So, okay. I mean, it was confusing to other people, which it affected me more than it was to me personally. To me personally, it was like, yeah, no, I'm, you know, this school thing's wasting my time. All I'm learning how to do here is, you know, get in fights or stay out of them. And, you know, and I'm done. I don't need to be here. This is wasting my time.
Yeah.
And so I felt that's what I felt about the education. You know, of course, the environment I was in wasn't the greatest one, but yeah, I was kind of on a mission, and so on that mission, you know, I was willing to do whatever it took to be great. You know, I would and you know, I mean, I'm thankful now, and I wouldn't change one of those days. I think during it, sometimes when you haven't gotten, you know, reached any of the summits yet, you kind of wonder like, man, this is a long hike and am I going to make it? And, you know, and you have to subsidize your way along the way. It's not like I haven't done every kind of work you could ever think of. I mean, I got sponsors, but it's still, that was not enough to really live. And so you just be, okay, what am I doing now? Okay. I'm cutting trees. I'm doing high tree, you know, I'm climbing trees with chainsaws. I'm running excavators. I'm doing masonry. I'm just doing whatever I can.
No way.
I'm doing whatever I can. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So not willing to do anything, to survive in order to just, you know, get you to the next session and to be able to, you know, to make, you know, to eat.
Yeah. How long did you do the side work? Like, how long was that ongoing?
I mean, listen,
I'm curious. Yeah.
And in a way I still do side work.
Okay.
I don't think it ever ended. It's just some of the side works changed, but
sure.
I'm not scared of work and I'm not avoiding it. So, you know, for me, I feel like even, you know, I used to laugh. I laugh because I say, you know, I used to do excavation work to subsidize my surfing. Now I do surfing to subsidize my excavation work. So it's like, now I'll still get on a tractor and go operate a tractor. It's just, you know, I'm not having to do it to pay my bill, but,
right.
But in a way, you know, I think all along the way, part of it is because I've had a real unorthodox approach into you know, what I pursued and how I've done it. I haven't participated in the structured aspect of professional surfing, and
okay.
And I've had little to no support from any American surf industry company. I mean, I was sponsored by a French, you know, I was sponsored by a French company for 20 years. I've worked with, you know, American Express and Land Rover and, you know, and other, all these other companies. At one point I did get sponsored by Nike,
okay.
Aqua Gear, a line of stuff that they were doing around water, for a little while. And, you know, again, but that's not a surf industry company. You know, it's like I said, I had all these other relationships because I've always been kind of outside, an outsider, in the thing, which I've always been an outsider, even how I grew up. So it seems for me a real natural place to be. I'm kind of just over on my own road, which I obviously I must like, because I keep ending
keep
up
doing
there.
It. Right. Right. tell me, like you mentioned, like risking your life in a wave. Can you describe to me, for someone who's never surfed, what it's like entering one of those, you know, giant waves? Like, are you terrified? Are you excited?
It's full commitment. I describe it like full commitment, and it would be like, you know, merging, you know, on Formula One or something. I mean, you know, you come into it, and you know, it just demands your focus. It demands all of your attention and your skill and your experience and all those things. And so that puts you on high alert, and you either operate well in under those circumstances or you don't. I've been fortunate enough to have kind of the capacity to operate well, in those environments, in those kind of stressful environments that test your, you know, your ability to do the right thing under pressure, and under real pressure. And I don't mean self-induced pressure. This is the real one, like, you know, you're going to be okay or you're not.
Right.
And so, but yeah, I mean, it's you know, listen, when you're in the ocean, when you're in what we call big water, I mean, you're at such the mercy of the elements. You know, somebody goes, oh yeah, you conquered the wave. I go, you don't conquer a wave. There's no conquering a wave. You survived a wave.
Right.
A wave allowed you to participate in it, and you participated with it, but you don't, you know, you don't survive, You don't conquer this stuff. This is nature. This is nature in its all of its, you know, essence and power. And you get to see where it'll allow you to go and what you can do. And from that comes a feeling of not only participating with nature, but a feeling of accomplishment that's so much greater than you can measure. That you dedicate your whole life to it. At least that's, you know, yeah. That was my, and the elusiveness of it too. It's like a girl that won't look at you. You just keep wanting to get her attention, you know?
Totally. Is there that point that you felt like where like that was the big wave or that was the big moment? Not that there's only one, but.
No, I mean, I had that. I've had those moments. I mean, there's a famous wave that I rode in Tahiti called the Millennium Wave, which is in the year 2000, August 17th. I rode a wave in Tahiti that was at the time considered to be unrideable. Okay. Because of the nature of the wave. And we had developed a technique using boats originally, but jet skis to kind of assist us to get on what we consider unrideable. And that particular wave was kind of a culmination of some of my life's work and some of these techniques kind of coming together. And that definitely brought me this feeling of exhilaration, of happiness, of just, I think it's when you've spent your life pursuing something you've never seen. And something that you just believed in, and then you see it and you accomplish it. I think there's an overwhelming emotional effect on you, that you don't have control of and that was one of those unique things. I think I've been fortunate to have quite a few of those in different ways at different times. Yeah. That one was just a very defined, and it was not only defined, but also socially acceptable, or should okay. I say socially approved, okay. would be a better way of describing it that, you know, all of a sudden it was approved by the surf world and the surf industry. Meanwhile, you know, you could do 1,000 of them, in the darkness and it doesn't make those any less. It just changes it when somehow everybody else says it was great too.
Right. It's nice. The accomplishment or the acknowledgement is important. How have you,
it's the way humans work. What's that?
It is. No, we crave it and it's a very natural thing.
Yeah. Well, it's acceptance. It goes back to the tribe. We want to be accepted so we can continue to hunt together.
Yeah.
We'll be right back after a quick word from our sponsors. Now back to the show.
How have you evolved, in your life and in your career? As you've matured in the sport and also just in life?
I think there's a saying that I try to live up to the best I can. It doesn't always work, but you know, when I was a child, I behaved as a child, but when I became a man, I put away my childish ways. And so I think my moral conduct, I'm trying to keep evolving. I know for sure when you're young and you're full of testosterone. I'm just older and full of testosterone now. But the fact is that I came in using aggression as a driving force, and then you accomplish some things, and then you have to kind of change where you're coming from, because to continue on using aggression to be the driving force, first of all, is exhausting, yeah. But it's also not honest. Mm. You know, it's not honest, and all of a sudden I told somebody, I go, try go from having aggression be the driving force to having contentment be the driving force. I go, these are very different emotions. These are very different feelings. I'm content now. Now I'm content. So how do I keep that drive? And so I think a big part of my attempt at maturing, my continued attempt at maturing, is that I am trying to take my destiny in my own hands and really tell myself when I've accomplished something, be in control of that and be like, hey, that was great. That was something unique. And I didn't need anybody to see it. But, and I still look at, you know, hey, look at this picture, or hey, you know what I did? I mean, just, it's just our ego.
So natural, right?
Our egos are always in there. But the, but really kind of saying, hey, listen, I want to dictate my happiness. I want to dictate my feeling of success. I want to dictate my feeling of accomplishment. How do I do that? And I just take the reins and say, hey, it's mine and I will determine it. And I think that's been, something that I've evolved into doing, and less about, and you know, there's sometimes the side effect of you accomplishing a genuine passion and having genuine intentions is that you're going to get public accolades. You're going to get accolades. They're going to come, but those are byproducts. Those aren't that's not the reason why. And because for a while, sometimes you wonder, well, is that all I'm looking for is acceptance?
Sure.
And is that all I'm looking for is public approval? And is that all I'm looking for is that stuff? And if that is all you're looking for, once you get that, then you're kind of done.
Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking like, I've gotten that and I'm like, but I'm not done. Right. And so I'm like, so really, it means that I really love it.
Yeah.
What it really means is I really love it. My intentions are genuine. You know, whether I bastardize parts of it or not, or just some of it's just out of survival, and to make a living, to feed my children, to do all those things that you have to do to survive. Yeah. But I definitely like, that taking control of it and being them, trying to be the master of my own happiness, as well. And, you know, and I think that, and then being okay with not having to go out and keep proving. Like not having to go back and do things that you've done to prove that you can still do them because other people are doing stuff. And then it's like, do I need to go over there and do that again? Da, da, da. Yeah. I mean, you do if your intentions are to show everybody that you can still do it. But if you're good with like, hey, I've done it. I mean, it's like the old boxer, you know, just having to go back until he finally gets knocked out. It's like, that's the point. Hey, maybe just be good with that. No one was as badass as you were. You knocked them all out. Now just walk away and be like, yeah, that was fun. Instead of I got to just keep going there until finally I get my, you know, my bell rung and I got to leave the ring. And so it's a little bit of that, you know, maybe being able to change it and then take that focus and aim that energy and that intensity and all of those and that formula.
Yeah.
At the end, it's a formula. Take that formula of success and put it in another, you know, genre, stick it somewhere else and just see if that formula is successful or not.
Yeah. How has family changed some of this outlook for you? Like, especially children, I know they can be a major force.
Well, yeah. I mean, of course, they're, first of all, you don't know what vulnerability is until you have kids. I mean, you don't know what truly being vulnerable is. It's great. You're a big, tough, rough guy, or you can take this and jump off high buildings and all that stuff. But then, you know, you put your kids in a car and you watch them drive out the driveway and you just go, I hope they're going to be okay. Call me when you get there. Okay. That vulnerability that you feel, you've never felt that stuff when you're, and then they, you know, I tell people, I go, listen, at the end of the day, being a parent is like, I describe it like building a samurai sword. I said, when you make a samurai sword, you take a piece of steel, you dip it, you heat it up until it's red hot, then you beat it with a hammer, and then you stick it in ice. And you just do that over and over and over, and eventually it's the hardest steel in the world. I go, your kids, they take you, they heat you up, they hit you with a hammer, and then they stick you in a bucket of ice, and they do that over, and then you're tempered. At the end of the day, then you're a tempered human. I think, you know, your evolution as a human ultimately is gonna come about through the parenting, first of all, in a relationship, commitment, you know, all of that stuff. And then it's going to go, and then parenting. Parenting is like the last, you know, not the last stop, but that's the last of some of the journey of becoming complete, right? And you know, these other parts that we spoke of earlier, these are the more selfish parts, which means that ultimately you're not going to do shit for anybody if you're not okay. So you got to go find out. It's like, You know, Gabby and I talk about it. I'll figure out how to get myself happy. You figure out how to get yourself happy. We'll come together. We'll be happy. I'll go out and, I'm not going to tell my kids now, if you do this and you do that and you do this, I'll be happy. Because first of all, you've just given them the reins, which they're going to totally abuse. And second of all, that's never going to work. So I'll go get happy. I'll go ride a giant wave or do whatever I got to do. I'll come back and then I can be dad. The best I can, of course. And, you know, we're always falling short and we want to, you know, we can always be better, but them seeing you in your completeness, in your wholeness, in your wellness, definitely gives them an example. You can't be like, hey, don't do that. Meanwhile, you're in the corner, like, you know, the old, yeah, don't hit girls. And then your dad's hitting your mom. You're kind of like, hey, that seems a little hypocritical, right. But yeah. So again, it's all part of that. You know, they're mirrors shining at you and reminding you, and you know, the things that provoke, that provoke you that are in them are just things that provoke you about yourself. And so you just to see yourself. And, you know, I always tell people, they call it parenting is because it's for the parents. If it was for the kids, they'd be calling kidding. It's not right. Kidding. It's called parenting. If you love them and feed them, they're going to be good.
You know? What, in serving, what do you, are you still looking to, like, are you still pushing yourself to achieve more? Is it like an enjoyment and a lifestyle now?
Yeah. I mean, listen, I have a relationship with the ocean that I've cultivated since I was 2 years old. Yeah. I would never, if I lose my love for the ocean and my love and my passion to ride waves, for me, I that's how I would describe it as sin. I would just say that's sin. Like, if you want to know in my life what I consider sin, that would be if I lost the thing, one of the things that brought me the most, first of all, education, yeah. All the greatest teachings the oceans taught me, the humility, the strength, the endurance, the thing, all these incredible things that I've learned from the ocean, all the things, all the blessings I've received, my life, the blessings of my life, my wife, my children, all these things have come indirectly from the ocean. And so in a way, you know, I want to retain that. Now, do I have like actual goals? Absolutely. I mean, the one fortunate thing that I have been able to do and continue to pursue is to reinvent ways of being passionate about the ocean. I don't just do one discipline, one thing. I don't just stay in that thing. Cause I, at this point, after 53 years, which would be almost 50 years of being in the ocean, I'd be burnt out already.
Right.
So, I look for new ways to be inspired. I think innovation is a big part of that. Just being innovative and trying new stuff and being a beginner and all that stuff. I think that keeps me excited. I definitely have some, you know, I'm always thinking about the giant stuff. I think that I'll always think about giant waves for the rest of my life. And even if I can't be on them, I'll go out in them just to be near them. Cause it's just like, you know, I always say dinosaurs are dead, but giant waves aren't. It's like, you want to see a dinosaur, wait till the surf gets 100 feet high and drive out there. You can get a good up close look at one. Yeah, I have some goals, that I continue to pursue in surfing, but the top goal is the passion and the love for doing it. I go, that's the thing, because that's the thing that'll make you do it for hours and hours and hours and hours. And you know, if you lose that, then you go, yeah, okay. And then pretty soon you're only doing it on the weekends, and you just pretty soon it's like it doesn't have the impact and the importance that it needs to in order for it to stay, in you the way it has, the way and what you benefited from.
Absolutely. Yeah. Man, this has been awesome. I've got like everything that I need. We're going to take it and put a whole story Perfect. Together. Is there anything that you want us to, like anywhere that you want us to direct people if they want to find out more? Is there a good place online to do that?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I have a couple different sites, you know, cause right now I call it my entrepreneurial stage of my career. At this point, I'm starting to pursue, you know, I have the Laird Superfood thing. I have a film coming out this summer.
I saw the previews for it. It looks amazing.
Take Every Wave. Yeah. That Rory Kennedy directed. And then, and then I have an apparel thing, an apparel project. And then I have boards and, you know, we're always, and then there's XPT, which XPT is a kind of a cool thing, and that's xptlife.com. That has a lot of cool kind of, I would say, lifestyle. And I hate hacks, because hacks seem to be something that you don't incorporate, that you live with constantly. But it's like, you know, lifestyle kind of tips and pointers of things of interest that people can apply, that I've learned, that we're learning, that we're continuing to evolve. And so anytime we can learn more, you know, the more open, the more information we receive by people, you know, every time I turn around, there's some new breathing technique or some new board design or some new, there's always, you know, as long as you're open, you know, and I think that's probably the most important thing is to, you know, there's a saying to retain your youthful enthusiasm, but to being open and being, and consistently learning, I go, that's what we're here for. Like, if you're not doing that, and I don't care if you're 5 or 55 or 105, if you're not learning and get, you know, and kind of immersing yourself in new and different things, I think you miss one of the greatest things about being a human. Like, that's our whole thing about being human is experiencing, you know, and I think to experience, that's why we're here. And, you know, I think we have to remember that. I love the big waves, and I love big wave riding because of the experience. At the end of the day, what does it about it that I really, it's because of the experience of it. And I think when you look at almost anything and you meet anybody who really is passionate about what they do, it's because they like the experience of it. Whether you're an artist and you like the experience of the creation from zero, empty canvas to some incredible piece of art, it's the process. It's the experience of that you really enjoy. At the end, you go, yeah, nice painting. But you don't go sit there and go, yeah, nice painting. Like, that's the experience. No, the experience was making the painting. The experience was being in the painting. And I think we lose that. You know, I think we start to lose that as we go.
That's a really interesting point. And people don't buy the paintings for the paintings most of the time either. It's the story. It's the story that goes into it. It's the whole creation process.
Well, they feel that in the painting.
Yeah.
Like, you, the painting, like, my daughter's kind of has an art side to her. And the other day, I'm like, something about this painting's really far out. Like, I don't know what it is. And then she goes, well, I didn't use a brush. I never use a brush. The whole painting's with my hand. Okay. But you couldn't look at the painting, you wouldn't say, oh, somebody used their hand. It wasn't like, you know, there was finger marks everywhere. You're like, something unique. But so people feel that in your work. And I think, you know, I would say, as an artist on my side, people have appreciated my art because of what's gone into it. Like, when they look and see me doing something on a wave, they can sense, they don't know exactly, sense that something has gone into it. And I'm like, yeah, 50 years.
You know? Right.
Yeah, 50 years. Day and night. I mean, you know, it's like I'm obnoxious. All I do is look out the window. How's the surf going? Oh, yeah. How's your day going? Babe, oh, wait, how's the surf going? Hey, how's the surf going? You know, it's like, I can't imagine. It's hard to live with. It's hard to be it. I can't imagine living with it. Just be like, give it a break.
Hey, you love what you do. It's amazing. Yeah, exactly. It's amazing. Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, we love it. And aloha. Thank you.
Aloha.
Take care. Have a good day.
You too. Bye. Make sure you subscribe to this podcast wherever you listen to podcasts so you don't miss future episodes in this series. And if you like today's episode, tell a friend.
Or two friends, or a lot of friends. We would love it.
And when you can, go to rocketship.fm and scroll all the way down and leave your email with us. We'll let you know about upcoming episodes, but we'll also get you in on a Slack channel with thousands of other product people and all sorts of other good stuff that we know you'll be interested in.
So go to rocketship.fm and sign up for our newsletter. If you enjoy this content, leave us a quick review. Or tell a friend, or share the link on Twitter. Anything helps to get the word out about the show. We really appreciate it. We'll be right back here in just a couple days.